Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
Anyway, our ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach on this June 23rd, Saturday, 2018. And we have a caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with The Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Been listening to you guys for a long time. Enjoy the show. A couple of years ago, well, maybe it was before 2016, y'all pointed out that whoever the next president was, at the time, I think Rick Perry was running. I remember listening to you one morning, and you said whoever the president was, they were going to have a very, very successful economy just based on the way their current economy was going.
Correct.
And y'all were talking about, hey, you know, Rick Perry's going to luck into this thing, which is, I think you're right. You're seeing that with Trump now to some degree. Besides all the things the administration is doing on regulation and everything else. But the question is, when you talk about free trade, I missed the first part of the show, I'll admit that, so maybe you covered this. But when you use the word free trade, do we really have free trade? I'm in the ag business, and I've been in industry for years, and there's a lot of examples. We really don't have free trade right now, do we?
Well, let me hit part of this, and then I'll hand it over to old Baldy here. Young Baldy's taking the first part. What is free trade? Free trade would be if we say there's no extra taxation on the goods by crossing a border. And the reality is that we don't have 100% free trade within the United States. If you watched, we just had that sales tax decision by the Supreme Court that said that the states are allowed to charge sales taxes on items based on where the buyer is rather than where the seller is. That's, in effect, a state tariff. So we don't have true free trade, but we're not targeting people specifically on the kinds of trades inside the United States. And that's been true with Mexico, Canada, and people that we've had free trade agreements as well.
We've reached over the years internationally and in the non-free trade zones a level of balance that everybody up till President Trump was reasonably happy with. For example, we impose a 25% tariffs on pickup trucks manufactured in Europe and imposed and brought into the United States. That's not Trump. It's just been there all along.
Right. Now, that's why you don't see BMW pickup trucks.
The fact is that the president noted that there is a tariff, I think a 10% tariff, on automobiles manufactured in the United States imported into Europe. But he didn't mention the 25% tariff on trucks, on light trucks manufactured in Europe that come into the United States. We reached, free trade is something we've been moving toward since World War II. And the reason we've been moving towards free trade since World War II, the United States has led this movement, is because countries that have free trade with each other tend to get very integrated economically and tend not to go to war with each other. Countries that gather their total manufacturing capability inside their borders are far more likely to declare war on a country that also has its full capacity inside its borders. So, for instance, the North American Free Trade Zone has minimal, very minimal to no tariffs on almost anything. There's a few exceptions. And we have some. The Canadians have some. The Mexicans have some. There was a long battle over that issue, and they're primarily in agricultural areas. But we finally settled on to the fact that the vast majority of manufactured goods in the North American Free Trade Zone have no tariffs. Now, if we tear that down, and we effectively torn it down when we say there's a 25% tariff on steel imported from Canada, which is the place we import steel, but we do it in this name of national security, which doesn't make a lot of sense, that is busting free trade and will... To the degree we've achieved free trade, we've seen growth in the world economy. To the degree we move away from free trade and by imposing a lot of tariffs, we will see less growth or even what the economists call negative growth in the world economy.
So the clearest answer is, do we have free trade? No. But we've been moving in that direction more and more for about 65 years. And
yeah, I would agree with that.
One clear thing, you said you were in agriculture. The Farm Bill actually was passed this last week in Congress.
Right.
Usually it's a completely nonpartisan, bipartisan, jump in there, everybody passes it. It was held up last time around because they wanted to do immigration. Okay, well, they've got immigration votes. They did the Farm Bill. I think the president missed that because it was a, we'll give you this if you give us that. We're going to vote on the immigration bill if you guys will vote on the Farm Bill. The president just says, don't worry about it. But he didn't know that the wheeling and dealing had already been done. Okay, so Farm Bill gives a huge...
Yeah, it started a year and a half ago.
Right. And then the Farm Bill, every time it's passed, it gives a huge amount of money to farmers. It pays farmers not to farm. It pays farmers to farm specific crops.
Well, not really. It goes to the insurance companies, and the insurance companies handle the big droughts and the tragic things that happen to farmers. It doesn't go direct to farmers.
No, it does at the sale of, for instance, corn. The government buys a huge amount of corn that it turns around and puts into WIC-type situation.
And it also makes ethanol out of it.
Right.
Despite the fact we're a net exporter of petroleum now.
Well, the government doesn't step in and say, I'm going to write you a check if you grow corn this year.
Yeah,
They write a check for growing corn.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just explaining it if there's anybody listening.
Right. So this is, it's a form of subsidy, just like a child credit is a form of welfare. A child tax credit is a form of welfare. We just don't call it that anymore because it's been subverted by politics. It's the same thing, but it's a different name.
Yeah, I think people in agriculture would prefer more of a safety net for drought.
Sure, and we do too.
Items out of our control.
And there's a real strategic reason for that.
For example, if you followed soybeans, last month soybeans have dropped 13%, which is just about the profit margin that a successful farmer has. So right now, if nothing changes, if the soybeans don't drop any further, and there's a lot of evidence it will, people that are doing soybeans won't make any money. And some of them are going to lose money this year. And a lot of people planted a lot of soybeans because China was starting to buy a lot of soybeans from the United States. This is where we think the trade wars, and let me say something very clearly here. China has been unfair in many areas.
But there's
subtle ways to deal with that. There are ways that we can deal with that, and I won't go into great detail on this, but because they're complicated. There are ways to put pressure on China other than with a sledgehammer. And going head to head with a nation state where loss of face is the biggest deal in the world basically says there's no way they can afford to back down. They have to retaliate each time. And the thought process, for whatever it's worth, and this has come out of the administration, is that since we import so much more than than we export to them, we'll reach a point where we put tariff when they put tariffs on everything that we import, well, and it won't hurt us that badly. Well, it's sure going to hurt some people badly.
Let me speak for a second on that and ask you guys a question. I worked for a big company before I did this for 21 years, and I was in the consumer products division, and we sold to Walmart, for instance, one of our biggest customers. And guess what Walmart always got? They got the best pricing, the best delivery, the best everything.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because they were the biggest consumer or the largest purchaser of anything we could manufacture. So what I think is Trump knows that as a businessman, that America is the largest consumer of everything in the world. We're going to get the best deal in the end.
So,
we're talking about, he hasn't really implemented. I mean, nothing. There is no trade war as of right now. It's all talk.
Yes,
it's
there
the
is.
Last third, I think it is.
No, there is a trade war. When you put a 25%,
when
you put a 25% tariff on steel and the price of steel jumps 50% in the United States, so that people who already have contracts on there suddenly lose money, that's a trade war.
And then one thing, that's what I'm saying. We've been in a trade war, like on the agriculture side. Like they'll make a deal on the soybeans, like you mentioned, China will. And we'll get a ship halfway over there. If they get a better deal, they'll cancel that contract. And we have no recourse. And then you see the soybean market really drop.
Right.
And as far as soybeans goes, they got to have them to feed their hogs. And so they can buy from another country, but that just means another country is going to have to come buy soybeans from us. So that part's going to more than likely work itself out.
Here's the issue with tariffs is – written into most tariffs is if you put a tariff, for instance, if we said specifically, or we'll just use soybeans. China says we're not going to take soybeans without a 25% tariff, and that's one of the things they're going to be instituting on July 6th. So they say soybeans, hogs, we are going to institute a tariff. If Thailand, for instance, buys the soybeans from us and then sells them to China, there are punitive tariffs beyond the 25% that are levied against Thailand. We just did this against India because India was buying Chinese steel and they had a temporary exemption from our tariff and was immediately turning around and selling it to us. So we just slapped them with a massive fine that amounts to about 50% of the price. So the black market is a thing that does spring up, and that's really what this is, a market that's devised to get around regulation. It becomes a black market.
Well,
sure.
Can I hit the Walmart thing real quick?
Okay.
The real quick thing on the Walmart is that Walmart sets its own prices. It negotiates both the buying price and the selling price. The negotiation on the selling price is not with their customers. It's with the marketplace. So they say this is a good price for selling, for we have a good margin here. When the government gets involved, unless they get involved on both ends of that negotiation, both the buying side and the selling side, this is the major difference between Walmart and the U.S. government. The U.S. government takes that extra purchase price and pockets it.
Right.
And the consumer is the one that pays it. So if Walmart is buying something from a foreign nation and there is now a government middleman, they have less control over the purchase price all of a sudden.
What?
And that means they have less control on the sales price.
Let me.
Yeah, that's
I'm going to argue with your example of Walmart if I could.
The marketplace.
Can I argue with your example of Walmart?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Walmart got the best deal, meaning they paid the lowest price that anybody could pay because they were doing the highest volume. Now, if the United States wanted to be in that position, we would go to China and we would say to China, we want to pay a lower price for your exports. But that's not what the Trump administration is saying.
It's the opposite.
They're saying your export prices are already too low. Therefore, you need to raise your prices so that they'll be made here rather than there. Which is the reverse of your Walmart argument. I mean, yeah, we already got the best deal from China because we pay the lowest prices.
We were paying
the lowest prices.
The complaint is.
Here is what China could do. They haven't done it. China in the past did do currency manipulation to get their currency lower so that their goods would be cheaper coming in the United States to put U.S. businesses out of business. They stopped doing that about 10 years ago.
Based on a lot of pressure from the United States.
And they have been cooperating, spending a lot of money to keep their currency at an even balance with the U.S. currency so as not to make their goods cheaper. You're saying Walmart has such a good deal, they can make what they buy cheaper. We don't want them to do that. And so the issue in this case is, if they run out of things to tariff for imports from the United States, which will hurt a lot of people in the United States, all China has to do is let its currency go into free fall in the market. They artificially support their currency to keep it right now about 6% higher than it ought to be. If they stop supporting their own currency and it drops 6 or 10%, everything out of China would effectively have all the tariff increases erased. They'd be coming in, with the tariff included, they'd be coming into the United States at the same price as they used to come in. And they can do that a long time if they want to. So we're in a position where the combined destructiveness, if we continue this war, is easily enough to put the world into recession. And to show you how much damage has been done in China so far, the Shanghai index, that's the equivalent of the S&P 500, is now down almost 20%, which means they're now having a bear market over these tariffs. You try to shove China into a depression. You try to shove China into a severe recession from its generated by us. And I hate to say this, but we tried that with the Japanese before World War II, and it didn't work out very well because they considered it an act of war. Right. And
well,
that's where we're headed.
Yeah, you kind of make the point that there is no free trade, in other words.
No, it's just a question of what are we working toward.
This thing is very convoluted. Hey, getting back to another thing you guys were talking about, you're talking about the economy. It's really juiced now. Tax cuts, spending. But isn't there another way to look at it? Because y'all said, that'll lead to probably, and I've heard other people say that in 2019, 2020, into maybe a lull in the GDP and maybe the economy. But isn't there another way to look at it that under the previous administration, the economy was so capped and so muffled that it just had to explode? It kind of gets back to what you were saying.
No, I wouldn't. I really
got elected.
I wouldn't say that.
The overdrive.
The GDP,
maybe that's what's going on. Maybe we're going to have six, seven years of great prosperity.
Wait just a minute. Let's address something. In 2014, just go back and look at the GDP numbers. We had a quarter with a 5% GDP growth. So when we're talking about the economy, in most cases, the administration at the time has zero impact on the economy. If there's a tax cut, that has an impact. If there's trade wars, that has an impact. But those aren't normal things. Those aren't things that pop up all the time. If the president says something, it can affect the market on a given day. But usually the president's acts don't cause your prices to change on what you pay for coffee or for an automobile or anything else. So for many, many administrations, we look at it and say the president had nothing to do with the economy that they were presiding over. That's not true when they're using their executive powers to change trade or to change immigration or any tax law changes. That's more congressional. So keep that in mind. So I'm not giving Obama credit for a recovering economy. It's really hard not to recover from the depths that we saw.
There's two elements here that would disagree with what you suggested. Now, gut reaction to what you suggested sounds good, and I would love to see it. But there's two elements here. Number one, we had sustained periods quarter after quarter while Obama was still president with GDP per capita at rates higher than it is today. So the economy was not stifled. It was we were still recovering from the 2009 debacle, 2008-2009 debacle. But we were headed, as we said, we're headed for higher things no matter who is president. The other thing is we are at constraints imposed by capacity utilization, which means we cannot have sustained growth like this because, among other things, we now have all the truck drivers driving trucks to the maximum hours legally they can drive the trucks. We now have the highway with every 18-wheeler out there pretty much loaded up and going, and we still have more stuff we need to ship. You can't grow any faster than your transportation allows you to move. The railroads are operating at maximum capacity. The highways are operating at maximum capacity. The trucks are operating at maximum capacity. And when that happens, growth, when it starts hitting these restraints, where the infrastructure is not growing to keep up with it, you wind up with a zero growth at some point. And yeah. Zero growth tips over into negative growth very quickly.
There was a technology that came out a couple of decades ago, but it was a technology that we in this area are very familiar with. It was developed by McLean's. Drayton McLean's company at the time developed this basically real-time shipment process that caused Walmart to buy McLean's just for this technology, the barcode scanning. You don't have big warehouses sitting around, but that is contingent completely on having lots of transportation available. The idea to have a warehouse is because we had constrained transportation. If you're talking about sailing vessels taking goods from one place to another, you got to wait for the sailing vessel to go away and then come all the way back to load back up. So you got to store the goods somewhere. Well, we've been getting rid of all of our warehouse space. We've been making condominiums out of them. And we're at a point now where the transportation is not keeping up with the goods, which means this is one of the lead-ins to most recessions. You get an overabundance of supply. And people have invested in that supply, and then the demand goes away.
And they borrowed money to invest in the supply, and then the interest rates go up.
Right.
Yeah, now, and any time anything goes up, it's going to come down. So there's going to be issues.
But there's an issue that you may have overlooked, too, and that is President Trump made three campaign promises, basically. Reform the tax code, not cut taxes.
Reform.
But reform. Instead of a proper reform, he did a tax cut.
He said reform and simplification.
The second thing he promised, of course, was that he would abolish the Obamacare the first day in office. Well, he did apparently didn't realize that the president can't abolish the law. The third one was a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure, which you haven't heard about. He made a choice. And the Republicans made a choice to invest $1 trillion in tax cuts, not invest anything in infrastructure, and obviously they were unsuccessful in getting rid of Obamacare. The Obamacare is neither here nor there. The point is, the people who are advising both campaigns said we need about $1 trillion invested in infrastructure or we're going to hit the wall. Well, we didn't invest in infrastructure, and we're on the edge of hitting the wall. And that's why we won't see rapid growth. We will see a lot of money borrowed, which is already happening, to invest in production capability, only discover that no matter how much production capability you have, if you can't get the supplies to create the production and you can't get to produce products to the people who want to buy it, you just lost your business.
Yeah. So the reality is, and this is to be absolutely clear, this year is going to continue to be amazing, even into next year. And
which is great, yeah.
Yeah, for the most
practical. We're talking about these things instead of the economy doing terrible.
Yeah, yeah, and that's really a good place to be.
Real quick, and then I gotta go. I gotta get back to work. But I was talking to a friend of mine. Yeah, I have a friend of mine works for a company, and he was telling me they just redid their healthcare for their family. And it went down $300 a month for him. And no one's really talking about that. And you touched on it a minute ago that Trump administration promised to reform health care, you know, but that's with Congress. They ran into all kind of roadblocks. But I guess they've chipped away enough at things and freed up enough where the insurance companies can lower rates. And that's starting to happen. If that happens,
well, the Obamacare.
This particular employee told me, he said he's saving $50 in his paycheck every week. And then now his health care went down $300 a month. He was telling me, he was overjoyed. The things are going great.
Well, I want to tell you, if Obamacare had been abolished, he would have seen probably $1,000 per month increase in his bill.
Yeah.
What you're seeing, I'm not prejudiced one way or the other here. I'm going to say that Obamacare basically was supposed to create a stabilization and then a gradual decline in health care costs. We're starting to see the gradual decline right now. It was a long-term bill, and it was designed to do that, and it looks like it was pretty well moving towards success.
There are some key factors of Obamacare that came in early, and they were really written by the Reagan administration and the Nixon administration, which was, number one, to cover a bunch of young kids or give the ability for the coverage of kids between the 18 and 25 under their parents' plan. That lowered costs. And we can look back at what happened there. There are a lot of other stuff in Obamacare that's broken and needs fixing, but there's this binary situation in Congress that's saying it's either written by angels or by demons, when the reality is, like every other law, it was written by politicians, which means it's pretty gross. But we got to look at the parts that we should fix. That is not part of the debate.
I enjoyed the conversation. I'm going to continue to listen, but I got to go.
All right. Take care, sir. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. The telephone number in here is still 254-773-1400, presuming it is Saturday, June 23rd, where you are. And we probably have some commercials we could play.
We do, but we're not going to play. Well, I guess we can play them right now. We'll go right ahead to play the commercials.
It's roughly the half-hour point. It's 11:31.
Yes. If you would like to call in, again, you just gave the number, but I'll give you one more time, 254-773-1400. We'll be back on the other side.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone number in here remains 254-773-1400, and we have a caller on that miraculous number. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was going to mention, you know, this multi-million-dollar scam that the United States has had for many of years concerning the child support. You know, they got these deadbeat fathers putting all this money out towards a woman, and then she feeds the kids a bowl of Cheerio, and then the rest of it she probably buys drugs and cigarettes and beer.
Are you saying that child support by fathers ordered by the court is a scam?
What I'm saying, that the money that they're paying out to the woman is a scam, because she's
Wait a minute. It is not a scam. There is no evidence that it's a scam. It is ordered by the court when there's a father who has a child he's supposed to support, and you're saying it's a scam?
No, sir, you got it wrong. I'm not saying that the person that's paying the money is a scam. I'm saying the money that the woman is getting to support the child, she's scamming that money because...
I disagree with you, and I cannot accept that for a second. You're saying that a mother should not... It's a scam when she gets money to feed her children because they're not feeding their children.
What the woman needs to do is she needs to prove by receipts everything that she buys for that kid, because the majority of these women have these guys checking up.
Where did you get your number on the majority?
Where did I get my number?
Where is your survey by anybody that says a majority of women who receive child support are scammers?
Well, you know, the majority of the women that do get money, you know, you think that's the only money.
Wait a minute. Where did you get? Where is your study? Where is your study? Where is your data that says women who've been divorced by their husband or who've gotten a divorce are scamming and not feeding their children adequately?
Well, you think that's the only money they get? They get food.
Wait a minute. I asked you a simple question. Where did you get your data? Are you just assuming that's true because you're a man?
I guess I'm just assuming that's true
because my mother was a divorced mother who got child support from my father, and she used it to give me food. And if you say my mother was scamming by buying me food while she was also working to put food on the table, I am going to firmly disagree with you, and I know a lot of people who've been in that position. And very frankly, I have no evidence and have seen no evidence whatsoever that women who receive child support ordered by the court, because the husband can go back. If he has any evidence that she, if he has evidence that she is not supporting that child,
or that is using drugs, he can get custody.
If she is found to be using drugs, she loses the kid.
Well, listen, sir, that your mother was a good woman amongst a lot of them, but I'm just telling you that a lot of women do not do the right.
How many women do you know that receive child support who use the money to buy drugs personally?
Personally. Well, I don't know any of right now. But
so you don't know any, and you've never heard of any, and you're just hearing some noise from someplace. What we do have is a lot of dads who are ordered to pay child support after they've left their wives and children who don't pay it.
Which kind of, there's a direct harm that happens to the child. If there's a married couple, this is the best position. I think we can all agree about that. A married couple with kids is the best way to have a family. You have a married couple, they get divorced. Now you've got to share the financial responsibility for the upbringing of the child. You can't just put it on the person that has custody, because the child was born, and the laws are all based on the concept that it takes more than one person to provide for a child. Otherwise, you've got too much hardship. So quite often, and this is unbalanced, it falls on the father. It falls on the father to pay money to the mother, because quite often the mother is the one in custody. It's not always the case, though. There are cases where the father's in custody and the mother's paying child support. So we got to look at it in a very clear way of who's responsible for the child. If the father hasn't given up all parental rights, if they want to have visitation, if they want to make sure that the child is healthy and educated, then they need to provide some money for that.
And any father who has been ordered to pay child support by a court can go back to court and say, make the mother prove that she's using this child support to support the child.
And they've got to prove it.
And they've got to prove it. So everything you've just requested is already in place. All that has to happen is the father to ask for it. And why don't fathers go in and ask more often? Because it's basically a waste of time, because mothers have a tendency to feed their children rather than do drugs or something. If they're doing drugs, they lose the child instantly.
Yeah, that's a really easy thing. If you say to the judge, she's on meth, and I have, you test her blood right now, she's on meth. Then if you've got some good evidence for it, you get the child. That's it. If the man says the woman is using the support money to buy drugs or to go to a casino or to support buying habits for herself, the kids are only eating Cheerios all day long, Cheerios and mac and cheese, and I'm paying $800 a month in child support, then they better be able to show why they got the Prada purse. So that's the reality of the law today. We're not attorneys, but this is something. It's really easy to hear from the man's perspective. It's really easy to hear from the woman's perspective. Go ahead.
Listen, I just wanted to make one more statement to you. I understand what you're saying, and this is what I'm going to say, and I'm not going to debate with you about this anymore, so you can go on with your program. The only thing I'm saying, that everybody out there that's a parent, millions of parents out there that receive child support from the father to do the right thing to raise their child, every one of those women out there, or men, vice versa, whatever, everyone has different family morals on how they handle their situations. Some of them handle it the proper way, like your mother did for you. Some of them don't. I can't prove this, but I'm just assuming this.
Well, that's
and
a bad assumption, I'm
going
to tell
start
you.
No type of a situation here, talking about something I really don't know about, like you said. I'm just assuming it. But either way it goes, sir, I enjoy listening to
All right,
your
thank
show.
You. Yeah, appreciate
and
the call.
God, and God bless you, and you have a good day. And your mother was a good mother by what she did to support you and raise you.
Okay, God bless you,
too. Day, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Yeah, that this is one of the things that our response was a little bit heated, and we need to be aware of that. We work so hard to try to give a balanced, researched opinion
on given items. And that means that we have to look at, is this an anecdotal thing? Is this a story someone's told? Or can we measure it? And if we can measure it, and the measurement isn't the same as the story, then we got to say, all right, that there may be individual cases where mothers do this, but it's not the majority and it's not the norm.
The important thing, I think, is the system is already set up to do what he was asking for.
Right.
And if a mother who has custody of the children is arrested for any kind of abuse, including using drugs, even having excessive traffic tickets she doesn't pay, she easily can lose custody of those children. And there have been many, many, many cases that I know of where the mother was not doing well for whatever reason and had the children taken away, and they look at the husband, and either the husband doesn't want the kids or is in worse shape than the wife, and the Child Protective Agency in the state of Texas takes the kids away from both of them. And so I think you're addressing a problem that doesn't exist, and it is one that's already addressed by the court. Now, I've heard men, anecdotally over the years, who pay child support, who gripe about paying child support.
Mm-hmm.
And
sometimes
the point, again,
valid gripes too.
The point is, all that they had lawyers when they got their divorce, and all they have to do is go back to court and say she is not. Now, because it's civil, you don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. You just have to come into court and say she is abusing the money. She's not using the money correctly. I pay in child support. She then has to show up with proof that she is using the money correctly.
And at least in the state of Texas, they've got guidelines. They've got guidelines to set this up to protect both the mother and the father. And this is something that I've personally seen people coming and telling me about this. If you're in a child support situation and you're paying the child support, do it through the Attorney General's office. Don't do it through personal checks. Because the state of Texas has set up the rules to say the way to prove this is to have pretty clear government oversight to make sure that it happened. If the government's going to have the penalty, the government should provide the evidence. And just as a side note, this is one of the things that I believe the state of Texas should do for immigration, is to say if you have a business in the state of Texas, you do e-verify for citizenship. This is one of the solutions that we do that first. If we go across the board and say e-verify, it's the first step in making sure we're doing it correctly.
And I personally believe that is, and it's in both immigration bills that the president has asked him not to pass. But I think it is critical that we do that. I mean, you want to stop illegal immigration other than people seeking asylum. It's very simple. You just make it difficult or impossible to employ a person who is not legally in the United States. And the way you do that is when they go to apply for a job, you input their Social Security number into the system. And it validates that the person we're looking at is the person who owns that Social Security number. And that could be that they stole the Social Security number from somebody and they're using that other person's name. Well, it immediately will pop up that, no, this person is already employed in New York. So if they're trying to work for you in Texas, they are faking, one of the two of them is a fake Social Security number, and it sends a signal. You put the address in, you put the information in, and that's immediately a sign to the Immigration Naturalization Service, or ICE as it's called now, that we have somebody who's committing fraud. And by the way, at that point, this is an interesting point. At that point, the person who is telling the prospective employer, let's say they come to work for me, and they tell me they are Johnny Jones, when in fact they're Jose Imanez, and they just to use two names, and in fact are stealing Mr. Jones' identity to work for me, now they have committed a felony.
Right. So this is something that we can address directly. The concept of zero tolerance, it's absurd when we're the ones funding it, not the zero tolerance. The fact that immigration is happening because you, listeners, and I, indirectly through our purchases, are funding this immigration wave.
And by the way, there's an interesting statistic that's being lost in this mess. The vast majority of people illegally in the United States, which, by the way, if came in on a legal visa or a tourist visit. Now, there's a crucial element here. Crossing the border illegally, which those people didn't do, is a Class C misdemeanor. Being in the country
illegally
is a civil offense, and you can't put somebody in jail for it. But the majority of people who are in the country illegally did not come across the border illegally. They came in and just stayed. They came in perfectly legally, like the people who come in from Guatemala. They could enter as tourists if they have enough money to look like tourists. They could just simply come into the United States on a tourist visa and then just not leave.
Yeah, just look at, you know, people fly into Orlando to go to Disney World quite a lot. If they just stayed, they have not entered the country illegally.
And interestingly enough, to follow that, what you just said, you were talking about the walls of the airport the other day.
Right.
Here's the point. We have not invested a bunch of money in identifying people who stay in the country. We don't have a system for identifying who's overstayed their visa.
All right. Here's a solution, and this is a solution. People aren't really talking solutions to immigration right now. What they're talking is either stop it or don't stop it. So let's talk about a solution. Some type of control at the border and at the airports to notify us when someone is in the country as a visitor or an immigrant. That's important. E-verify for all employers. Doing from the numbers that are already provided by the government, the types of surveys that say this is how many employees are not able to be found based on the local population. So whether that's agriculture, high tech, it doesn't really matter. If you can't find Americans to do the job, you've got a set of paperwork to do, and you say this is how many employees we need. The employer pays for the people to come, and when the job's done, pays for the people to leave. So this is a solution. This is a thing that when I, for instance, John Carter, who is a extremely conservative, our representative. When you look at where he stands on immigration, all of those points are part of his stance. We are so caught up in the, we've got to stop the immigration before we do anything else, while still funding the immigration, that we're sending very mixed signals, that both to U.S. citizens and to people that wish to come to the United States. The signals that we're sending are mixed, are confusing, they're difficult to understand for anyone. So let's start back at the beginning.
You know,
and we've got a caller on.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So we've got a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, Rick in Salado. Can you hear me?
We yes. can. Welcome, Rick.
Go ahead.
Hey. Can you touch on the Mexico election, the general election?
You mean Donald Trump's clone running for president looks like he's going to make it?
Is he a clone?
Yeah, he is. He
doesn't look like him.
He, his rhetoric, once translated into English, sure sounds like Donald Trump.
Only it's not make America great again, it's make Mexico great again, and it's Mexico first, not America first.
Well, how about the socialist? Somebody was mentioning it
That's in Spain.
Last night. I heard
That's in
he
Spain.
Was a big-time socialist.
That's in Spain.
Spain,
but the Mexico is electing a populist. In the polls say he's going to win.
The diseases that are coming into the country.
What diseases?
From China. China's got like 40%. What? How much is? What? They got some kind of SARS coming back in from.
We haven't heard anything about that, and I watched.
Nobody's talking about it.
Well, that's because it isn't happening.
It isn't. I heard that, man, there's a whole bunch of diseases. China's got an outbreak, and they're keeping it quiet.
So you know about it, but the rest of us don't?
I guess.
Oh, well, you'd have to reveal your secret sources. We watch the reliable media sources.
SARS, I'm looking at the CDC page right now.
Name your reliable media. I don't want to hear what
Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
It's not even media. SARS. If you look it up, there's a whole page on SARS for Centers for Disease Control. They have numbers on doctors that have found SARS. We don't have any outbreaks of SARS in the United States. The outbreak of SARS was in 2003, and it was centered in Asia. A total of 8,098 people worldwide became sick with SARS. Of those, 774 died.
So where did you get the information that was coming into the United States?
Eight people in 2003. Eight people in 2003 had SARS.
He's not popular.
No, no. What? Where did you get the information there was a SARS outbreak in the United States?
It's not in the United States. It's in China.
Where did you get that information?
InfoWars.
Well, there was one, but it was in 2003.
Yeah, and there may be an ongoing outbreak, because China is not good at giving out. It's really good at not giving out information. They have whole blackouts for areas of the country that they don't talk about. So there may be SARS outbreaks there. There may not be. But that's when you talk about eight people in the big outbreak. Eight people got sick in the United States, and all of them recovered. Eight people out of 300 million. We're now talking about silliness. If that's not the reason to stop immigration, the important part of immigration is you got to make sure the people that are coming in have vaccination records.
Right.
I'm totally on board with that.
Disease and criminals. I want them not in the country through the system.
Well, let me tell you something about criminality. Every study, every single study, without exception, done by the right or the left.
All right.
Clearly states that immigrants from anywhere, including Latin America, legal or illegal, have a dramatically lower incident of criminality than people born in the United States.
Per capita.
Well, fine.
So if we had lots more immigrants, our crime rate would go down.
So just look at El Paso. Okay, El Paso is
coming in over the border and not through ports of entry. They need to start coming through ports of entry.
I'm totally in agreement with you there.
We agree with that. And what happens when they shut down the ports of entry?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know,
here's the thing.
Country,
we have to have reasonable laws.
Who comes in.
Well, you're completely correct. But people asking for asylum.
I know.
And in the El Paso crossing, they simply said, they suddenly decided, and this was like a month ago, they suddenly decided we are not accepting applications for asylum anymore.
Now, what I was going to say about El Paso wasn't about people crossing the border. It was about the crime rate in El Paso. It's one of the safest cities in the United States.
I'm all for workers, okay? But I'm all for it. If there's a good way of doing it.
That's correct.
And we'd love to see an immigration bill that allowed it. But the problem, let me say about this. There is a worker visa, and employers can apply for people on that worker visa. But I'm going to tell you a simple fact. The Trump administration made a conscious decision to not staff that office.
Yeah.
So we got the Congress has allowed a certain number of worker visas each year. We're filling about 15% of them. Because the president of the United States made a decision he didn't want workers in here on worker visas.
Now,
it's all about quid pro quo. He wants something, they want something.
Who's
the they?
They are U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants workers, right?
Right. Well, yeah, the business community wants workers.
Well, they got the money, and they need to throw that money at the wall then.
Here's the thing. When you put up a wall,
wait a minute.
Whatever the
Chamber of Commerce is supposed to pay for the wall?
Well, I thought Mexico
was. Why not? They're the ones who want the workers, right?
Well, no. The president promised that Mexico was going to do it. The reason why he promised that Mexico was going to do it is because nobody here wants to do it.
Well, what says Mexico's not supporting our Chamber of Commerce?
Do what?
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You know what the holdup on the wall is?
It's all about the money.
No.
There's two bills ready to go right now with the wall in it. $25 billion for the wall.
The
two bills
that he doesn't want voted on has $26 billion for the wall. But the problem is we won't let him build it in Texas.
Here's the problem. There's a big problem, and it goes back to logistics. The only company with enough capacity to sell the cement is a Mexican company. We don't have the ability to produce the cement in the United States to make the wall. We would have to buy it from Mexico. And they don't want to sell it to us.
I don't have a problem with them donating that cement.
Yeah, they have a problem with it, though. That's the issue.
Carlos Slim would say he'd be glad to sell it to the United States. The problem is that the Rio Grande doesn't run in a straight line.
And it changes year by year.
And the proposal that the president has is he'll put the wall up, but the people who own a lot of property, millions of acres,
American citizens,
on the other side of the wall,
yeah,
no longer have access to their property, but he's not going to pay them for it. And as a result, the congressional delegation from Texas does a wonderful job of blocking any bill that funds the wall.
I'm all for friendly relations, but right now the cartels think they are in charge. And in fact, they are in charge.
Yeah, in many places. You're right.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
We're about out of time. Thanks for the call, Rick.
And it's funny because we can get into these conversations about immigration with most people, and we can come to a very easy common ground. Whether that you're a Democrat or not, or a Republican, you can say, one, laws should be followed. If they're on the books, they should be followed. If they're wrong, we should change them.
And here's let me, if I could, reiterate on one of the things in Texas. The proposal by the president and by the Republicans is to put the wall up and buy the ground the wall is on from ranchers in South Texas and everybody, golf course owners and everything else. And in the process, to cut them off from their property, but the federal government says, no, we're not going to buy the property that we've now made it impossible for you to access. Now, if the government came in, the problem is that it raises the price from $26 billion to $150 billion. If you buy the property, you're going to cut off in Texas.
This is what's called eminent domain.
Texans don't like the government coming in and taking their property and then not paying them for it.
And we are about out of time for this week. We want to reiterate one thing. Times are really, really good right now. Because we're waving flags of warning about the future doesn't mean you shouldn't take advantage of what's happening right now. Put money aside. Be the grasshopper. Save.
No. Be the ant.
Oh, yes. Be the ant. The grasshopper eats the ant's food. It's not the other. Yeah. Anyway, we're about out of time this hour. If you'd like to contact us off the air, the local number is
254-947-1111.
And toll free is 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. There are podcasts, there are emails, all good stuff. And until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.